but really at 5. And we're here to connect the dots with all these many issues. Our guest today is somebody I've been working with on the NAACP Education Committee, but when we go for meetings each month, there's people from, let me introduce her first. our guest is Diane Jackson. And Diane, what I know is that you're a retired librarian from Glenwood School, I believe.
Yes. Recently retired.
Very recently retired.
Yes.
In fact, I was shocked when I heard that because she looks so young and beautiful. I just was, I thought that she was still working, would be working for 20 years. Okay. Before we talk to Diane, another member of our committee is here, Lori Clark, and she is going to only be able to stay a little bit, but she wants to make a very important announcement, and it is important. Lori works a lot with young people, young teenagers, and primarily. So, Lori Clark, I'm glad you were able to come and make this announcement yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. So, on Saturday, there is a group of young people that have been organizing at a local level around awareness around police issues, and they held their first forum in May at Hargraves Community Center, and there was a lot of interest and a lot of positive feedback about that forum. And so there's going to be another event on this Saturday, May 30th, from 1 until 4 p.m. at the Carborough Century Center. And so this time it's going to really delve into knowing your rights. So, what are your rights? If you get stopped by the police, how are you to respond in a way that protects yourself and that is respectful? And then what happens when you get stopped and you're just walking down the street? Or what happens when the police come to your house and say, we'd like to come in and we're doing neighborhood watch, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But there are 4 incredible videos, and we have an outstanding panel that will reflect on those videos and then have audience participation. So I'll just tell you a little bit about who's on the panel.
That'd be great.
It's Defender Brennan Alburl from the Guilford County Assistant Public Defender's Office. We have Carolina Manrique. She is a staff attorney with the ACLU, and Orange County Public Defender James Williams. And so, again, they're going.
Oh, it's a terrific panel.
It's an excellent panel.
They know the whole system in and out.
Absolutely. So, again, they're going to explain your rights, how to assert them, and how to ensure that they're honored. And, so, for example, if you get stopped and once you've gotten your citation or your warning, you simply respond in a respectful way, officer, am I being detained or am I free to go? And a lot of these just very basic things people don't know.
And or get panicked.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. People get fearful.
They're very fearful.
When they see police. This is a free event. And there's an exciting new app that's going to be released on that day. The ACLU has released a mobile app, Know Your Rights. So it contains a little button on there so that you can start recording in the event you get stopped. And just, some great tips for you to be aware of in the event that you're stopped. So, this is a great way for us to build relationship with local law enforcement, and again to really share with people and empower local citizens about how to respond in the event that there are stops.
So that would be for any age, although it's geared to young people.
Absolutely, any age.
Any age can come. It's free.
It is free.
We all need to know our rights. But particularly young people a lot of times get targeted more even than us older ones. And so this is, we want to prevent
absolutely
the terrible things that have been happening all over this country. And prevention is so much better than having to protest afterwards when
that's
there's a tragedy.
Right.
So this is great, Lori.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I certainly hope I can look forward to your participation and you spreading the word.
Yeah. And we'll announce it again at the end of the program. Definitely.
All right. And there will be Spanish interpretation.
Oh, that's good to know, too.
So, you know, we're encouraging all local people in the community to come out and get information so that we can build bridges and citizens can be empowered.
This is great. And I'm sure when the police will be glad to know what, you know, that these young people, I mean, that'll keep them on their toes even a little bit better.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Knowing that, you know, the more we're all informed, the more we're all educated, both citizens and police, I think the better the interactions hopefully will be.
And it's, you know, again, it's not anything that the police should be,
mm-mm,
you know, frightened by because
no,
people know their rights or think that citizens are being cocky. You know, we have rights. And a lot of times, I didn't even know, you know, some of the rights that I had until I saw the video.
Yeah.
Just some very basic and very respectful things
yeah
that you can say, you know, that empower you to just move on or so that you won't be detained.
Mm-hmm.
And so very powerful videos just about some things that have gone wrong in
mm-hmm
other areas. And then again, this is just a way for us to build bridges because it's about community policing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're grateful that the Carrboro Police Department is a co-sponsor of this event.
That's great. That is absolutely great because that's the whole kind of atmosphere we want to promote.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, Lori.
So thank you. I want to thank Diane for letting me take advantage of some of her time. And thank you, Lori, for inviting me.
Okay. And good luck with all of this. I know you're leaving here to meet with some young people.
To meet with young people about some issues around race. And, you know, we've had some local issues around race. And so we're going have an open conversation about race relations, what it means to them, and how we can make change and make some recommendations to the superintendent.
Okay, it sounds
so
good.
I'll put my other hat on.
You put your other hat on. Okay, well, Lori, good luck and congratulations about having such wonderful meetings and getting the community, helping the community be a better place. And now we're going to have our guests come on.
My dear friend, Diane, thank you. She's doing some awesome work.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think, as I mentioned, both Lori and Diane are on this wonderful group that I'm relatively new to this group. It's the NAACP Education Committee, and then there's another group meets with us, and we're working with the schools on several issues to try to help the schools have better equity for all students. So Diane Jackson, I started to say, and thank you for letting Lori get her promo in there about Saturday, but Diane's a retired librarian and very recently retired and knows a lot about how the schools operate. So that's what I feel so privileged to be on this group because it's people who know so much more than I do about what's actually happening on the ground. So, Diane, welcome to the Wolf Show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And we're going to have a conversation about schools and education. And
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just start. I'm recently retired in August, but that for me has been a wonderful experience because now being retired, I'm able to do some of the things I put off because of time. I currently volunteer at the hospital 2 days a week, something called Family Brunch, where they have dinner for families who are, like, visiting someone. UNC has all of these wonderful programs where they try to assist families who are there for people for a long stay so that they won't have to spend a lot of money for food. So they have all these programs that they actually feed families of long-term people who are in the hospital. So I do that, and then...
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and then on Wednesdays, I do something called pediatric cuddling, and that's holding babies. Because it's a state hospital, a lot of their children come from other places, and families may not get here to the weekend. So you go to visit little kids, and you get to even hold babies, and not being a parent or a grandparent, I get my grandparent fix by doing that on Wednesday. So
I didn't know anything about that volunteer work you're doing. That's lovely.
They have wonderful opportunities there for people who would want to volunteer at UNC hospitals.
But that's a good point you made. With it being a state hospital, people come from all over the state and then can't always stay here the whole time when their child or loved one is here. Mm-hmm. So that is neat.
It's
that's
wonderful.
Neat. Good for you. Mm-hmm. So you care right now it's from cradle to whenever.
through the school system,
through
I guess.
Through the school system, So back to the school system.
Okay.
So I was writing down some of the things. I think if it's an overall topic, we've been really working on equity, and maybe you could talk about that.
Well,
in
I
some
guess,
of its manifestations.
I've been here. I came in the 80s, early 80s, and I had the fortune, I guess I was fortunate enough to sit on the very first panel that was formed to deal with the issues of equity. It was the Blue Ribbon Task Force under the leadership of, at that point in time, Dr. Peterson, Neil Peterson, and Mark Rorster. And so we came together, we did identified issues, came up with solutions, and it was a very comprehensive effort. It was probably around 20 people from the school systems, from the community, and a very diverse group, and tried to come up with, I guess, issues and the way to deal with the issues. At that point in time in which the committee was formed, it was formed because minority students in Chapel Hill, which is a high-wealth district, were doing worse on tests, standardized tests, than rural North Carolina students. And so after they go through, and the first thing people want to talk about is poverty, no, they eliminated that. So even kids from upper middle class families or upper class families were doing not as well as kids from rural North Carolina, low socioeconomic. So we ruled out everything, and the final, I guess, thing that we as a committee dealt with was the issue of race. Felt that race had a big piece in the way people perceive students and their expectations of students and whether or not they challenge students to do their best. Mm-hmm. So if I didn't expect you to do well, I was willing to take almost anything that you gave me. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of work, a lot of commitment, and from that came a really big commitment of Dr. Peterson and the district to then figure out ways to address this issue. So we had consultants to come in. We had comprehensive staff development. We formed something called equity teams at each school. All of the administrators had to get trained, and then the people on the equity teams were trained. And so you look not just at, I guess, people's practice, but also perception. So it was a very challenging time, but I felt it was deep work around the issue of race and equity in the district. And so that was in the 80s, and since the 80s, I think I've been on equity teams, equity committees. I've been probably to almost every equity workshop that the district has offered. And here we are in 2015, still dealing with the issue of, like Lori said, race in the school district.
Yeah.
So it's been challenging. There have been times that I found it to be rewarding when I could see differences in staff attitudes and staff's perceptions. But I think now we're dealing with something a little bit different, and the work needs to take on another form.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So all that you were doing in the 80s, mm-hmm. it didn't, even though people tried so hard and worked so hard at it, it really didn't move the needle at all, or did it help some?
Oh, I think it moved the needles significantly. I've been doing some training with a group, local group, organizing against racism. And even before I got to start to take the workshops under that group, I'm always reading. So it talks about the fact that racism is a shape-shifter. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't look like the racism we knew mm-hmm. back in the 60s. It doesn't look like what it appeared to be in the 80s. Now it is a lot more subtle, and it's not the in-your-face kind of things that we saw back in the early civil rights movement, but it looks quite different. Mm-hmm. And so, unfortunately, in Chapel Hill, we've had some incidents that were had racial undertones, I guess would be the best way to describe them. I try not to get into the ins and out of that, because for me, the bigger issue is the academic part of this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily need to change your heart, but I need to change your practices. So mm-hmm. if I send my child to school every day, I expect my child to be treated fairly. I expect my child to get the best that you have to give as an educator, because the bulk of the people, that's what we're there for.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole idea of not challenging children, or you coming with your adult perspective and you putting that on my child in terms of what my child can achieve, mm-hmm. I have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the part that I liked about the work that we did in the 80s, there was no backing away from it, though the training that staff people received was just around that. It was, you can't back away from this. This is going to be, we're not going to sugarcoat this. This training will be, because we all come with biases.
Mm-hmm.
And so own it. Own your bias. Mm-hmm. Work toward changing your attitude mm-hmm. and putting forth the best you that you can in front of the classroom.
Mm-hmm. So that did help improve things some, but was still... And I wonder if part of it, when you try to work on training for teachers and all of that, I think we have a pretty large turnover of teachers. Mm-hmm. This is an unusual community in that it's a very mobile community. Mm-hmm. So that each year you're probably starting all over again in terms of equity training or diversity training or all of that with teachers. I'm not sure what the statistics are in the turnover, but I know it's pretty large.
And so that was one of the key pieces. Back the earlier work that we did, that was recognized. So when we hired at each school
mm-hmm.
new people, mm-hmm. that was a part of the process.
Okay.
They came in, they got the training.
Mm-hmm.
Generally back then, the question, when you were interviewed, we talked about that as in the interview process.
Mm-hmm.
This is the work that we're doing in Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. Would this be something that you could come in and be a part of?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any Are you uncomfortable in dealing with this? And if so, this district isn't the place for you. So it was very, like I said, it was very upfront.
Yeah.
It was very consistent. So because of the turnover, every year each school had training, or the district had training, mm-hmm. for all of the new teachers, mm-hmm. around equity.
And what do we have now?
Have we
gotten away from that?
We still have the equity teams, and we do some training. I'm not sure how comprehensive the training, mm-hmm. is. I do know that we have equity teams, and those teams do work with new teachers.
Mm-hmm.
I do understand that there is some degree of training. I don't know how comprehensive,
mm-hmm.
it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, though, a committee that was recently formed under the district's equity. I forget his proper title, but it deals with equity. Sheldon Lanier.
Yeah.
He has formed a committee that will actually draft an equity plan for the district.
And that's his, mm-hmm. task force, and you, mm-hmm. are one of the ones on that task force.
I'm on the task force.
Lori Clark was here briefly. Yeah.
Yeah, and that is a very diverse, committed group of people who really dedicated to making some, mm-hmm. significant changes, mm-hmm. in the way we do things here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm real excited. We've only had one meeting, but it was a wonderful meeting, and under his leadership, I anticipate that the district will move forward in new and exciting ways as we work around the issues.
So what you're, mm-hmm. going to check is what kind of training all new teachers get. Is it what you had started in the 80s? Has that gotten diminished over time? And then if there's an equity team at each school, what kind of consistency is there, et cetera, et cetera?
And the whole idea is to examine all practices and policies
through
the lens of equity.
Through the lens, mm-hmm. of equity.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know in the short time I've been with the Education Committee, I know one of the things we've been working on has been the whole issue of training,
mm-hmm.
for teachers, for staff. And even if it's teachers who've been there a while, this is not something I think we've been talked about different times in our meetings. You come in and just get one training day, and then therefore you it's an ongoing process, and so that'll be looked at also. And the other thing we've talked a lot about has been the role and function and training of SROs, the police officers that are in the schools. And that's been something that's been very troubling in many ways. You know, that whole, they're in the police force and they're in the school, but the school is for education, and to delineate when it's appropriate for them to step in and when it's not. And that's also been one of those issues that's varied a lot from school to school. And so I don't know if you want to talk about that at all. Or
I don't have a lot to say about the SROs. From what I gather from our work through the NAACP committee, education committee, what we're trying to do is put in policies or practices so that it will be consistent,
exactly.
from school to school.
Mm-hmm.
One school, the principal may say, this is not the job of the SRO for some specific incident, and currently another school may say, well, I turned that over and the SRO handled that. So in terms of, I guess, monitoring the activities and how people are treated equitably, then you have to have practices that are consistent across the district. So I do know that they've been working with the district, and the district leadership under Dr. Todd LaFreeze has been very supportive of the work that the Education Committee has been doing, along with working with the police department both in Chapel Hill and in Carrboro. So that's really not my baby, but I like the fact that we're looking for consistency
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Because one of the things that the NAACP, and this is not just here in Chapel Hill, this is around the state, Wake County, the schools has had a huge problem mm-hmm. Where the kids had some water balloons and mm-hmm. got arrested. I mean, the inconsistency and also the fact that with police who come out of the criminal justice system, unless they get training to help them differentiate, this is an education facility. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to avoid that school-to-prison pipeline because once a kid gets hauled off to court, even on a minor thing, you know, you have to think about what kind of a self-image are they taking with them. One of my grandsons worked for some years before going back to school in social work with Volunteers for Youth, and I just mm-hmm. was telling him about our education committee, and he said some of the kids did something pretty bad, but a lot of times it was the kind of thing, he said, when he was in school, and he's pretty young, you know, you went to the principal's office mm-hmm. or you stayed after school or whatever, your parents were called in, but you did not get taken to court.
Right, and North Carolina is only one of two states that try juveniles as adults. So
that's
you may something that other places would consider a prank, here in North Carolina, you end up with a criminal record.
And could have mm-hmm. a felony mm-hmm. record mm-hmm. for something that is what in other places would be considered minor. Mm-hmm. And again, the inconsistency with the different SROs, and if we don't have consistent training and mm-hmm. delineation of this is your role and this is where it begins and this is where it ends, and for each principal to know that so that they don't undermine that, that's where a fair amount of the work, you know, at least for the NAACP, has gone on. Mm-hmm. So with your task force, does that go into curriculum also?
We haven't had but one meeting. I would imagine so. There has been in the district some work, and it was done under, I guess I sat years ago on another committee, which was the district curriculum committee, mm-hmm. and we talked at length about curriculum as it relates to minority history and history of black and brown people. And supposedly at that point in time, we were moving away from the quote-unquote Black History Month. And in this district, we were going to roll it into everything else. Well, time has proven to me sometimes when you roll stuff into everything else, it loses its focus.
Yeah.
So we did have someone, William Hennessy, who is an avid teacher. He did some curriculum writing to kind of infuse the curriculum with Black history. But I'm not sure where that stands now. So we have not gotten to the point of curriculum, mm-hmm. and I don't know to what degree mm-hmm. we will get to that, but mm-hmm. we have definitely discussed that.
Maybe for our listeners, mm-hmm. you could say what AVID is.
Oh, it's Advancement Via Individual Determination. It is a program for what I call promising minority students. Generally, they're first-generation students, first generation to go to college. AVID is a wonderful academic program, but it's also a support program. So they teach kids how to take notes. They teach kids how to have public speaking skills. They check in to make sure that kids are keeping up with their projects, their assignments. They will talk to the teachers if kids need intervention. And pretty much it is putting kids on the track to go to college.
So giving them that extra support mm-hmm. that sometimes with parents working two jobs, et cetera. You mentioned we're in a high-wealth community, and there's mm-hmm. A lot of young people in our school who have a lot of extra advantages.
Yes.
And being living in a competitive society, that it makes it very, very difficult for kids from just average, you know, let alone mm-hmm. poor.
Right.
I think Dick has been giving me the signal that it's time for our station break.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Weird.
This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. We are being brought to you over the facilities of WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. And we're right across the street from Internationalist Bookstore, our one and only during the history, which is actually since 2008. That we've been on the air. Internationalist Bookstores are
has been our underwriter
been our
all
underwriter.
These years.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And they're diagonally across on Lloyd Street.
On Lloyd Street in Carrboro.
On the left, the second store in.
Right.
And please go. They're a community resource. You can find out all the things that are happening in the community, all the political things particularly. When you go there, they'll know about Lori Clark's program on Saturday, Know Your Rights. I'm sure they'll have that flyer up there along with
right.
other things. Okay, and Dick Paddock is our co-host and engineer, and he's being mentoring today one of our dear friends, who's John Ewer, who's with Veterans for Peace and other organizations, who, if Dick has to go somewhere, can help fill in when he's around. And we're always delighted to have you here, John. Thank you. And I'm Lori Hoyt, and co-host with Dick Paddock. So here we are, and our guest today is Diane Jackson. Who
I want to drop one little announcement in.
Okay.
You're going to cover that other one, Lori's again at the end. But,
Anything else too at the end. But
The Southern Anti-Racism Network is going to have a conversation on race and education. And it will be June 18th, next month.
We got
and
time.
It'll be, right. And it will be at 6 p.m. on June 18th, and it will be in the auditorium of the main Durham Public Library on Roxborough Street.
And we can do that again at the end, too.
Right.
Dick.
And just a little name dropping. The superintendent of Durham Schools will be a member of the panel. That's Dr. Bert Lahm.
Oh, great.
So
Diane may want to go and check that out, see what the Durham schools are doing, what we can learn from each other, that's for sure. Okay, we're going to get back because Diane has to leave us a little bit early. She has another meeting to go to. So we've been talking about Diane's work since the 80s with the school system, and the sad thing is that we're still dealing with the basic underlying issue, which is that our minority kids are not doing not as well as the white kids in this school system, which is a very wealthy school system with kids who have, you know, professors' kids, doctors' kids, every advantage under the sun, but also not as well. And is that still true, that from the 80s with rural kids?
I don't think it's still true.
Oh, good.
Back then, that was what, I guess, got us started with that. When Dr. Peterson looked at the data, very surprising to find that out. But we have made tremendous strides here.
So there has been progress.
Yes, there has been progress. We have a wonderful group of educators in this district, very committed. But nevertheless, the work still has to be done around the issue of equity. So it's not just for me pointing fingers, I don't think, to teachers. It's not that at all. It's how policies, what are policies? What policies hinder? Recently, I spoke to the school board about they had a policy that they introduced about for students at risk of failure. And I spoke to the school board. The policy spoke to the fact that the school would prepare something called a personal education plan if a student was identified as being in risk of failure. And that plan, afterwards prepared, would be implemented and shared with the parent. A copy of the plan would be given to the parent. And I suggested that they add the language that a parent-teacher conference would be held when they give the copy of the plan to the parent. Unfortunately, that wasn't added to the language, but my rationale was that if I'm in education, I understand education. I write a plan for you, give it to your parent, who may, like you say, work two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be something that that parent even understands, mm-hmm. but your expectation for a student at risk of failure is that that parent will implement that plan. And as I was sharing this with a girlfriend, she said, Diane, the analogy is like, because you have a car, it comes with a manual. If you don't know auto mechanics, you can't take that manual and fix what may be ailing your car. The same thing with a policy that parents will receive a copy of a plan, but no one has talked to them about that. And so one of the things that this equity committee will do, this task force, is also look at policies. What policies do we have in place that actually hinder our support of kids at risk or hinder our efforts as we look to equity practices? And when we write new policies using the equity lens. So hopefully, like I said, this committee, I'm excited about working on this task force, and my expectation is that great things will come from it. That's me.
Well, that's wonderful that after working on all of this since the 80s that you retain that hopefulness and optimism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and because it's always the temptation to get jaded, to get tired, to get cynical, to just say, oh, gosh, been there, tried that, you know, nothing's going to work. And instead, I just, you know, admire so much that after all these years, you know, you're still in there trying and working and seeing and able to see the progress that's been made and say, but we can do better and so hopeful about it.
I learned these two things stay with me for my 30 years in the district. One was we had a school board member back in the, I guess, 80s, 90s, Ken Tao, and he spoke one time to the teacher orientation. We have an orientation at the beginning of each school year, and he said that he only asks one thing of each of us, and that is we treat each child as if it were our own. Now, if you think about that, then we can eliminate the achievement gap, the work around equity. We can eliminate all of that if we really took that to heart. And put it in practice. And the other was another teacher, colleague, outstanding teacher, Julie Dermody. And she said to me one time, we were talking about this issue, and she said, Diane, for some kids, I am the only person. She said, so I take it to heart that I am a change agent for maybe a child. She said, not all of them. She said, but some of them, she said, so those who come to me with this need, these needs, she said, I give them everything I got because I stand in the door of whether or not they may be successful. And when you know, that just blew my mind and that's why I tell you, we have awesome people in this district that show up every day to give that best to kids. But again, it's a system.
Yes.
And systems, just like anything else, when you're dealing with systems, there are things that need to be adjusted and there are things that need to be improved. And that's what I see the work of my sticking to it, I guess, is because I know I was one of those kids that somebody believed in. I had a single mom who was working, but somebody believed in me, and it made a difference. And so I think we have people that show up every day in classrooms who do the same kind of thing, because nobody enters teaching for the pay. Most of, and that's why, seriously, that's why I think the pay is awful, because they know you're here because you love to teach.
Yeah.
So because you love to teach, we don't have to give you all these fancy things, because you're going to show up anyway, because this is your passion.
Yeah.
And that's how, that's the cross I think we carry.
Well, you know, my heart is always out there for teachers. I come from a family of teachers. You know, my mother, my sister retired from 37 years of teaching. My son retired from 30 years of teaching. So I just, and he goes back, like you're volunteering with this. He goes back twice a week back to Riverside and Durham, helping teach and mentor kids, because he loves it, you know. And I think if only we could get our legislators to realize what a treasure we have with our teachers, and that it's bad enough you don't pay them very well, but please treat them with respect, just like we want to treat the young people with respect. Teachers need to be treated with respect. They're not the problem in and of themselves.
I want to highlight two other programs that are in the district that deals specifically, I guess, with black and brown students. One is Parent University, under the leadership of Carla Smith. Carla Smith has this program where she, through workshops, through book clubs, she involves parents of minority students. I just was in a book club with them because I do work through Blue Ribbon Mentor Advocacy Program. But what it was we came together, very diverse group, large Hispanic population as well, and did a book club around a book called It's the Little Things. And she graduated, Parent University this year graduated the largest graduation class they've ever had, with, again, primarily black and brown parents, or parents of black and brown students, by teaching these parents how to advocate for your student, how to negotiate the school system, because a lot of people haven't had good experiences with school themselves. So to tell a person who may have been in trouble when they were in school, well, you need to go in there and talk to the principal. Well, the principal is a different, they have a different perspective.
Could be pretty intimidating.
Right? Exactly. So she has a very fantastic program with that. And
excuse me, is that in all the schools, or it's meeting in one central school?
It's a district program, so any parent can apply to it, and then they actually get a certificate of graduation once they've gone through these workshops, and it's just a wonderful program.
So the invitation goes out to, like, at the beginning of the year in all the schools, to all the parents to know about it. Oh, that's one. I've been hearing about it, but I didn't know it was going. I thought they were still hoping to get it going. That's great.
No, it's been going for several years now.
That's
but
great.
And the workshop changes, so it's not a stagnant kind of curriculum. The books that they use for the book clubs are change as well. And the other one is the Blue Ribbon Mentor Advocacy Program. That has been in place for a good while now.
Yeah. I know about. That's great. Tell me a little bit about it for our listeners.
Well, it's a wonderful program where you sign up to mentor a student, and generally they ask that you mentor for several years, but you get your match when the student is in fourth grade, and you're supposed to have contact at least twice a week, either by phone or one physical visit. I'm on my second match. My first match, my young lady is now ending her freshman year in college.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was with her from fourth grade all the way through.
Oh,
and I just got a new match last year. She's now in fifth grade. And so it's been remarkable. Like I said, I don't have kids of my own, so this is another way of getting my kid fixed. And then I go home. But, yeah, so it's a real good program where they match a community person with a student, very promising student in the district who may need just an extra hand or an extra nudge or somebody to kind of navigate the system for them. A lot, like you said, a lot of parents here have several jobs. I mean, just to live in Chapel, you need to have several jobs.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, so that's another wonderful opportunity for community people to become involved with the school district.
Which reminds me, we had Greg Meyer on, I guess it's at least a couple of years ago, so I think it's time for us to...
Well, the new director is Granville, I want to say Johnson.
Well, I'll find
I know
out.
His last name, but his name is Granville, and he's in charge of the matching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we had Greg on, but that's at least 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. So it's overtime for us to get on about that, because it's an absolutely marvelous program.
And the community, I mean, they have wonderful volunteers from the community that work with this program. And the kids have great opportunities. They do, like, summer camps. The kids go to summer camp, and Blue Ribbon tends to navigate all of that and pay for their cultural events that the students can attend, sponsored through the Blue Ribbon program.
So, Diane, it seems to me that you wear so many hats, and I don't know, no wonder you're always so busy, because you're with the babies, you're with the Blue Ribbon program, you're doing policy, and
well, remember, I don't have kids, so.
Kids are no kids. It's just amazing to me that you are working at every aspect of education and caring for kids. Mm-hmm. And it's just wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I don't know, how are we doing on time? Is this...
We got about 5 minutes.
We got about 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. So what have we not covered? what do we need to be talking about? What about with training? We've talked a little bit. Is that something that's not where you're putting your main energy into? It's more
with the
policy?
District's training?
Yeah.
I'm not putting my energy into that, because I'm no longer with the district. I know that they are doing a lot of training with Matt Thompson. This is a consultant that they brought in to actually deal with curriculum and the practice of teaching and how you teach, and with a strong literacy focus. So the idea is that we're dealing with equity as a component of what they call the achievement gap. I call it the opportunity gap. But the training is another component of that. So, fortunately, I don't know a lot about that.
They had that program for everybody and showed the video and stuff. Mm-hmm. I went to that. It was very interesting. It seemed, in a way, very commonsensical. But just like you talked about that policy that you would think would be common sense, if you're going to make a plan and sending a letter home that your kid's in danger of failing, but not bring the parents in on it and sit down and talk to them, common sense would tell you that's the way you should do it.
Exactly.
So a lot of things, he was showing how, with things that they had on the board, that they had some rhyme and reason and not just words hither, thither, just to get words out there. And so a lot of it seemed common sense, but it made a lot of sense. And I hope that the district has put a lot of hope into that. And I certainly, hope it takes off the way that they are hoping it will do.
And again, just having worked in the district for so many years, the whole idea, yes, you can train a person, but make training a part of the school day. Mm-hmm. When you train me at the end of the day, I have given my best for the entire day, and then you bring me in at the end of the day and say, this is something really important, and you've given it to me when I'm worn out. You know, so if we really are committed to this, and we have done that in the past, so I'm hoping that they'll continue that practice of having staff development during the school day. But because we lost a lot of time for snow, I don't know how this is working out, how this is shaping out, because the early release days were the days that we use for staff development. But I'm hoping that they will consider that and just come up with creative ways to get that training in.
So back to the policy issues, you mentioned the one example. Are you thinking of any other policies that you're aware needs to be taken another look at, or is that going to be part of the task force looking at all the policies?
I think the task force will look at policies. That one came to mind because that one was so recent. I kind of just stumbled upon that one and literally was in my car parked somewhere looking at the board agenda and saw that and said, oh, I'm going to run down and hear what's going on. So I kind of just spoke to it. It was done early May, and I kind of spoke to it and suggested the insertion of just a small phrase, and then this past board meeting was when it came up again, and it was no-go with the phrase that I suggested. So I left like you, kind of scratching my head, because to me that was just like, this is what we're supposed to do anyway.
Anyhow,
I was like, okay, I may have missed something in this, but
well, you were a librarian, and one of the things that is a deep concern to everybody, I think, is the whole thing with reading, that if you don't have that mastered by third grade, because by fourth grade it's into content, up into third grade it's still hopefully
No. We're doing content now. We're starting with content. We do content in kindergarten. So, so I may read you a fiction book about bees, but at the same time, I'm introducing you to a nonfiction book about bees, because the whole idea is that you stimulate interest in all ways. So content, even now with all of the testing, they're being assessed even in kindergarten, not so much in terms of content, but in certain skills, in terms of how do you attack letters, how do you attack words. So this whole thing of content being connected. Library is no longer the way it used to be when we sit and meet with teachers about the curriculum. So if Miss Third Grade teacher is teaching about rocks, when you come to the library, I'm teaching about rocks as well. I may have a fiction story about rocks, but I may have a nonfiction story.
So you're
story.
Coordinating.
Oh, yes. And that's been for years now. It's no more we drop you at the library door. Generally, best practice is the librarian and the teacher are in there together. I'm co-teaching.
With reading, I guess my concern is, for kids who are behind on that, what extra help are they getting, or would that be a policy matter, or would that be?
Well, I mean, I think it's both. There is the kid, the policy at risk of failure, but we have in each school there are literacy coaches whose job specifically is to go into the classroom and teach classroom teachers the best practices.
Okay.
They also model the best. So they may come into your classroom and do a lesson and model the best practice. So they're constantly getting training, but they're also training teachers. So a lot of the staff development within the school is around the literacy coach who coaches the grade levels, the individual teacher. I mean, I've gone to training with the literacy coach, so everybody in the school gets that training.
So I know you have. So, well, you know, it makes me realize that I'm still so out of touch with the modern school system. Mm-hmm. I mean, what you just were describing, the school's doing some really terrific things. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times we don't give the school credit. Then we see where the lapses or the lacks are. Mm-hmm. But hats off to all that you all are doing. So I learned a lot.
But thanks again for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming, okay. Diane. I hope you'll come back again as your task force goes on. You can give us a report on what policies that you all are working on.
Okay, great.
And I thank you so much for coming, sweetheart.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you all.
Okay. to get out, you push the green button on the left. When you wait,
somebody's out
here. Dick, you start making announcements, and I'll go so she doesn't.
Okay. Yeah, this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, the wake-up call. this is the end of the show. We're going to drop in a couple of quick announcements. First of all, be sure to stay tuned for Chris Fitzsimon, News and Views weekly radio program from NC Policy Watch. We also want to remind you that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is still hanging fire in Congress. We're trying to get David Price in particular to vote no on fast track. If you want to do that, you can call this number, 855-712-8441, and they will connect you with your Congress member, who in this case is David Price.
So give that number again, Dick. I didn't write it down fast enough.
855-712-8441.
Thank you. So, yes.
And you want to do your announcement, Lori's, again?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, this Saturday, there's always something to do on Saturday if you're feeling lonesome and don't know what to do with yourself. Okay. There's going to be Know Your Rights. May 30th, this Saturday, from 1 to 4 at the Carborough Century Center. And this is geared to young people, but it's free and it's for all ages, so that you know if you get stopped by a policeman, whether walking down the street or in your car, or they show up at your door, what your rights are and some ways to handle the situation that can have it go more positively. And it's going to be they're going to show, I think, one or two videos about some of those situations I just mentioned. And then they're going to have a panel with the Guilford County Assistant Public Defender, A. Brennan Aberley, the North Carolina ACLU Staff Attorney, Carolina Manrique, and Orange Chatham County Public Defender James Williams. They'll explain your rights, how to assert them, and how to ensure that they are honored. Free event with refreshments provided. And then they're also going to, that day, they're going to unveil the North Carolina ACLU Mobile Justice App, a great tool to assist you when you need to assert your rights will be demonstrated.
We've got 5 seconds left, so we'll have to say goodbye.
Okay, this is Lori Hoyt and Dick